So the business is running while you're sleeping. Now that's why you got to be a little bit mindful. Are you calling yourself an entrepreneur if you have a mom and pop shop where you need to go wake up early in the morning and be there at the desk 9 a.m.? Then that's not entrepreneurship. You just bought yourself a job.
Most of us might confuse entrepreneurship with, okay, I'm going to build a business, but then I'm going to slave away all my hours into that business.
You paid for a job for yourself to have a fancy founder, chairman of the board kind of titles. I mean, it's funny enough, but yeah, it's entrepreneurship. Right. So I believe in creating companies to solve problems. I don't like the idea of creating companies because I have to.
Active Ventures has worth approximately, that's true, $350 million.
The last time it was valued.
Valuation.
Yes. What we need to also be speaking about is 100 plus failures.
All right, we're here with another special episode with a great friend of mine, Jigar. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So for someone who's listening to you in this podcast, who is Jigar?
Serial entrepreneur, serial investor, government advisor.
Wonderful. Simple.
Simple.
I remember there was a mention of you in the article saying that your dad had a shop in Sharjah.
Yeah.
Gold Souk.
Yes.
What was that something of a moment that fueled you to who you are today?
I think it shaped me definitely more than even fueled. It was the souk. It was the hustle. It was the exposure to the world of commerce and business and trade.
What year was that, if you don't
know? Late 90s. So I've been, going there to grab the ice creams from a very young age, probably from the age of 4 or 5. I mean, at least that's what I remember. I have memories of being there from that early age, but the memories of understanding business, trade, commerce, counting money, counting cash, those are from probably around the age of 10, 12.
10?
Yeah.
Is it maybe some influence from your dad?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it was more like, like any other boy, you look up to your dad and, your dad's your hero and you want to mimic what they're doing. And I think that's where it all started with seeing him do business. Oh, I want to mimic him and I want to do business and I want to. Then it was all about curiosity, trying to understand why are you doing what you're doing. And I think the curiosity was the fuel. But being in that situation, coming from a family business background, was what actually shaped it.
So what was your first business that you built here? Or have you always started immediately with business, or did you had a job at first? What do you do?
No, I've had a job. I mean, listen, I finished my education, did my master's, did a job at HSBC Bank in the world of finance, realized that this corporate world ain't for me. Somehow, it didn't feel fulfilling. Came, did a job at a much more smaller entity, which was a startup called Creative Zone. And which was ultimately something that became a success story where I had bought in a minority stake and then a little bit more, and then a very successful exit last year.
Wonderful. I think it was like an 8-figure exit. I'm not sure, but it's maybe confidential, but it's a lot of figures for sure that it was sold for. Now, what was the sense that made you feel like, I want to just do business? I don't want to continue working in that corporate ladder.
I knew that I wanted to do business from a very early age. I mean, I probably knew I wanted to be in the world of business from that age of 13, 14, 15 already. But I went into the corporate world because I don't think the support existed. For those that may be thinking that, you have family money and that's sufficient, what they don't realize is that I wanted to make a name for myself, and I wanted to not be someone who is always going to be, under the shadow of the family name. So I wanted to make a place for myself. I wanted to use my brains, my way, and I had to start from scratch. I remember that when I came into UAE from after finishing my master's, and I had a check to deposit because I was working while studying. I had to borrow 5,000 dirhams from my father to open up a bank account on a tourist visa here in the UAE.
Oh, wow.
Because that was a minimum balance account, and I didn't have any cash on me. But that was the last time I ever took money. And I've never taken a penny since from anyone. So
that was back then, and when?
That was 2011.
2011?
Yeah. 2010. Okay. I came in 2010. Yeah, 2010.
So it's 15 years ago.
Yeah. Memory. Fade.
Do you feel like the time flew by just quickly?
No, it feels like yesterday. I mean, I can't remember the years because it just felt like yesterday. So for me, it's more like if I really think time flew, time does seem like it flew, but the memories are very strong. So there was no support, right? Like, you know you want to do business. You know you have a few good ideas. But how do you validate your ideas? What is good business and what isn't good business?
Mm.
School doesn't prepare you for that. I mean, I'm sorry, I had a master's degree from University of Melbourne, one of the most prestigious universities in the world. And I can still tell you that university does not prepare you for the real world. It does not teach you entrepreneurship.
So theory.
Yeah, I mean, you can apply as many case studies as you want. Like we were talking earlier about your engineering days and, you know, how you looked at some CAD drawings, but that's it, right? I mean, it was for that case study, for that course, for that assignment, and then that's it. Does it really apply in the real world? Do they even teach you how to apply it in the real world? Probably not. And I'm someone who's always been curious about application of theory more than anything else.
Hmm. So what do you think that some of the, not entrepreneurs, would be entrepreneurs, let's say they're students in university right now.
Yeah.
What are they missing out by not trying first to do business maybe in the outside world before studying business?
So for those students, I would like to say, don't waste your time and your money. I think education is great, but you need to have a context of what are you studying and why are you studying it. So the worst example is when I'm doing job interviews, right, for C-suite people, and they come in with an MBA degree right after a bachelor's degree, and I question them, have you ever really had an intention to run a business before doing an MBA? Most of them say no. So they're just getting a degree for the sake of getting a degree, and not for the sake of actually acquiring knowledge. So if you're studying to get a degree, don't waste your time. No one's asking for your degree anymore.
Even if you study in Harvard or MIT or some of the Ivy Leagues?
I think it may improve your prospects at a job interview, but it's not going to make you a better person. It's not going to make you a better entrepreneur. It's not going to make you richer.
Hmm.
That's what you're aiming to be.
So how can you be richer?
There are only certain ways you can be rich. You've got to be earning money 24/7, which means you've got to be earning money while you're sleeping. And from my experience, that can come in from real estate, number one. So Dubai is a great market for that. UAE is a great market for that because, you know, we have a great opportunity out here in the real estate market because you're earning rent even while you're sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
But then it comes at a very low level interest rate. Style, right?
No, I mean, property tax. You don't have to worry about that.
If you're comparing it to the rest of the world, it's better out here.
Yes.
But then it's not as good as having your own business.
True.
So the business is running while you're sleeping. Now that's why you got to be a little bit mindful. Are you calling yourself an entrepreneur if you have a mom and pop shop where you need to go wake up early in the morning and be there at the desk 9 a.m.? Then that's not entrepreneurship. You just bought yourself a job.
That's the thing. I mean, most of us might confuse entrepreneurship with, okay, I'm going to build a business, but then I'm going to slave away all my hours into that business. So you just basically built another job where you now you're self-sufficient on it.
You paid for a job for yourself to have a fancy founder, chairman of the board kind of titles. I mean, it's funny enough, but yeah, it's not entrepreneurship.
So how do you truly become an entrepreneur here?
Create businesses which are basically going to survive, thrive without you.
Hmm.
And It doesn't mean you've got to be like having hundreds of these businesses. That's not the point. I mean, you don't have to be a serial entrepreneur. But to be an entrepreneur is you having the ability to understand that the business has to continue to survive and thrive in your absence, not by you doing a job out there.
So how does someone go about that? I'm sure there's a system they have to implement in order for the business to function in itself.
Yeah. Start looking at what are the tasks you're doing and start hiring people to do those tasks and bring in specialists one by one. Doesn't have to be on day one.
For example, when you look at big corporate companies or you're looking at bigger companies, they're like, I need a CFO, I need a CEO, I need all
the. Start with an accountant if you don't want to hire a CFO. Start with a salesperson if you're not looking for a business development manager. Mm. So the idea is most of the people that I come across who have basically bought themselves a job are usually doing sales and business development.
Okay.
So what's stopping them from hiring salespeople? Creating a process which that sales team can then use to bring you results.
Hmm.
And one of the reasons why people are not doing it is because they're afraid. They're afraid that external people will not put in the same effort and the same energy. And now the question comes, is that, if I were to do it, I can bring in 100, they will only probably bring in 80.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that you got to find a way to bridge that gap between 80 and 100 while you're outside the business. That's your responsibility. And the second one is go create more and more opportunities for yourself.
How do you know if who you're hiring is the right person for the job?
How do you know which ticket is going to win the lottery? Right? I mean,
I don't know.
But this is better. It's still calculated. You can do your job interviews right. You can qualify the skills as much as you want. But then there are certain elements that will only come into play once you start working with each other.
Mm.
So firstly, attempt to bring in the people that fill the gap, right? So whatever tasks you're doing, try to understand where are the gaps. If you were to leave the business and now bring in people with some speciality, some experience in doing that thing. Pose that. Is it going to be a cultural fit? We don't know. You can try, but it's not going to be guaranteed. Are they going to perform? Not sure. However, it's your responsibility to have in the right performance measurement techniques.
Hmm.
It's your responsibility to then, you know, like I say, hire fast, fire faster if need be. Because there's no value you're going to get by holding on to something that ain't working.
And how long should you give this person a chance? For example, let's say you're hiring someone. You had a certain KPI that you're looking to meet, but he's not meeting within the first month or two.
So it depends role to role. If I was to bring in a C-suite level person on board, would I not give them at least a one-year runway to turn the business around if it's a failing business? Or if I'm launching the business, then I should have a target for maybe a one-year mark and a two-year mark and a three-year mark. So you're looking, your goals are basically time-bound and they are sort of based on what kind of role you're talking about. But like, let's say, for example, if I was talking to a salesperson, an executive, those targets can be daily.
Daily, not even month or two.
By the time you're looking at sales figures on a monthly basis, you've already delayed yourself by an additional month. You got to monitor a few things daily. So that's what I think people need to understand, that the system exists for every business. It can be created where you can have performance measurement metrics, which are either daily, weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, quarterly, annually. Certain KPIs are annually, but you start working backwards. If I want to achieve this annually, what do I need to achieve on a daily basis? Or firstly, quarterly basis, and then monthly basis, and then weekly basis, and then working days. You can work backwards.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned how we can really measure an employee's performance or someone's performance and see how they can really add value. But where do you actually go and find these people? Should we find them through LinkedIn? Should we find them through Upwork? Should we find them through networks?
So again, listen, I think a very valid question. I think network is usually the right way to proceed with these things. But This was one of the gaps as well that I identified, and that's why I started, with my co-founder Talent Hire, which is a recruitment agency, out here in Dubai, because there is a challenge finding good talent. And then there's a challenge about finding a good agency that actually understands what you require for your business.
Exactly.
And takes that consultative approach, not just, you know, filling the role kind of a mindset. And then there are tasks that don't even require people in-house. I mean, seriously, COVID taught us that a lot of things can be done, you know, remotely. Why are you not bringing the cost of the business down by keeping people remotely? So that's where the origination of OCube came, which is, a BPO, contact center, plus administrative services. Anything and everything that you don't need a physical presence in your office, move it offshore.
Got it. Now, it's interesting also you mentioned that you have approximately, I'm not sure if this is true, you have 31 ventures under
you? Active.
Active ventures under you. That's worth approximately, if that's true, $350 million.
The last time it was valued.
Valuation.
Yes.
Wonderful. So from that big amount of experience, why did you decide to have so many companies instead of just doubling down on maybe one or two cash cow?
Right. So I believe in creating companies to solve problems. I don't like the idea of creating companies because I have to. I think every time I come across certain problem statements, and as an entrepreneur, I come across many a problem statements. Now, what happens is it's not that I will always have a solution to every problem, but if I'm able to create a solution to any of those problems, then I go test the waters, I test the market, I create the MVP, right? Take it to the seed level and then take it to the market. And try to make it as a sustainable entity in itself. And that's what it's become. It's become now a very clear vision to enable entrepreneurship, where the mission is to enable over 1 million entrepreneurs. And we're going to do it by creating an ecosystem for entrepreneurs, because they come up with great business ideas, but they don't have the means to either take it to the market to even identify, are they going to succeed or fail? So there are not enough accelerators here in the UAE. And, you know, I am a made in UAE product. And I have grown up in the shadows of this leadership. And that makes me want to, you know, punch above the...
Give back.
Give back, right? And I mean, don't dream small, right? I mean, if you're going to be in this part of the world, what I love about Dubai is it teaches you one thing. Don't dream small, right? If you're going to do something, go all in and dream big. And, you know, you want to have the largest, the tallest, the biggest, the fastest, the most.
Yes. I mean, we learn from His Highness, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum.
Right.
And Dubai ruler, where everything he wants to be number one.
Right. And do you realize that the best university we have is the best university in UAE is not even in the top 200 in the world? Do you know that no matter what, how many unicorns have we created out of UAE? Just 11. So I said, you know what? I'm going to be a part of, rather than being a complaint box, let's be a part of the solution, create an ecosystem, and I want to be a unicorn factory.
It's a wonderful thing as a serial entrepreneur, but let's say for someone who's a beginner, they might have that shiny object syndrome, you know, that everything, there's an opportunity and I'm going to start this, I'm going to start that, I'm going to start here. And it just becomes analysis paralysis. He doesn't know what to do anywhere. It's like he built this business and he builds this business, but none of them is actually going to scale because he's just focusing his focus all around. It's distributed in a way.
So for those, I would say, first question to you is, are you solving a real problem? Why are you doing this? What would happen if you did not bring that business to life?
I mean, most of the people that I would think in my generation and most people that want to build and strive, they're looking to get that financial freedom. They're hoping that with business, eventually they will build it up, scale it in a way that they can live free or live better than what they have
You
been.
Failed. you failed because you chose to chase money rather than to solve a problem and to create value. So are you fulfilling an unmet need? Are you doing something which is faster, cheaper, more efficient, more affordable, better quality? If you don't have a differentiation for your product or your service, if you're not bringing real value by solving a problem that hasn't been solved yet, then don't do that business. You're going to fail. That's what chasing fad means. Stop chasing those fads.
So I'm curious here, for example, sometimes in business, you see numerous grocery shops all around.
Yeah.
And they're all active businesses. They all have people, customers coming to them. In a world where everything is now feeling saturated, are you saying that we should not focus on the market that's saturated and go somewhere else and start something totally fresh?
So that grocery store that we see in every block survives, thrives, because there is a population living in that physical space that wants access to those products immediately. Is e-commerce changing that? Absolutely. I mean, when was the last time you walked into a grocery yourself?
I walk often. As of myself, I would say once a week I go there.
Okay, once a week, right? Yeah. Go back to your childhood days out here. How often were someone from the household visiting?
Very often. It would be like every day.
More than once a day, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, are you consuming goods through e-commerce, whether it's, you know, Amazon, Noon? Yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes for urgent stuff, yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
But then you also have those people that are still not bought into that whole digital world. So I don't think there's a concept called digital business, right? I think being digital is just one more channel. So if the business is a grocery business, they got to be able to do delivery. They are, you know, pick up the phone and deliver the goods. They got to be on the platforms. They got to be, whether it's Noon, Amazon, or whatever it might be. And they need to have that physical space for people to walk into at the same time, because there's a need of all kinds. And that's what I meant. Like, you're fulfilling some need.
Got it. I understand.
And the ones which are going to be successful are the ones who are going to be surrounded by people and population for something like that. And, you know, Dubai is a growing economy. We want to double the population out here in the coming decade. So, yeah, more and more people will need daily goods.
I feel like it's, as long as Dubai keeps attracting, something special about Dubai is that it keeps growing.
Yeah.
It's not just stagnated as some other cities might
be. It's not by chance.
It's just keep growing and keep growing and keep growing. That means there's going to be more demands, more people, more customers, more businesses, more real estate required. Everything is more. So it means that businesses will thrive eventually if they have something truly special to offer to customers here.
Yeah, I mean, just offer whatever, like you gave an example of a grocery or a barbershop or anything. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a fancy business, as in it doesn't have to be a fashionable business. It can be a very boring business, and yet you can walk away with a lot of money. Insurance is one example. Right? So from that perspective, law firms, audit firms, accountancy firms, these are all boring businesses from the looks of it, but they actually turn a good amount of money. And UAE didn't just get it by luck. It's been orchestrated. It's been planned. It's been executed well. I mean, if you look at the leadership and then you look at the people that are actually executing it, you have an amazing pool of talent doing that work for His Highness too.
Yes.
So
you can look at Dubai as a one big entity.
Yeah.
With a lot of employees under it that execute really well.
Absolutely. That's why it's called Dubai Inc.
So, from your vast experience, what is this underrated move that you have done that took your startup from zero to profitable fast?
Okay. I think what's underrated is the speed, right? Your question is sort of, how did you go fast? And the answer to this is, people are constantly holding themselves back because either they have emotionally bought into the idea too much. So when you're from an owner's perspective, from an entrepreneur's perspective, they have that bias, Right? The bias being, oh, it's my baby, it's my child, it's my vision, it can't fail. I take the approach of saying it's an idea. I need to validate it as fast as possible. And now, if that means accelerating it, getting the MVP as soon as possible, getting some marketing in there, testing the waters, testing to see if there are paying customers as soon as possible is what matters. And you know, more often than not, it's actually been failure. You spoke about my 30 plus active companies. What we need to also be speaking about is 100 plus failures.
That were behind the scenes that most people don't even know.
Yeah, because they failed, right? So they never came out. I mean, some of them never even saw the daylight, right? They died at the MVP level, they died at the testing level. So there are 100 plus companies that failed. But then the beauty is that you do it at a speed so that you don't lose time.
How do you know when to stop and say that this is not going to work? I have to move to something else.
What you thought is you solving a problem from a vision perspective, inability to get paying customers for that problem is where you stop.
Maybe is it because maybe I'm charging a high price or something like that, that maybe that avoids
I
the
mean,
customers from paying?
that's a pivot, right? So, I mean, if obviously if the cause of the failure was the price itself, you obviously tone down your price and you know you readjust the price. Sometimes you're undercharging. I mean, more often than not,
That's
it's
the thing.
actually more often.
How do you know?
No, so you test the waters. You test it at different price points. You know what's the market comparables. You know that every problem has a solution at a price. So how are you bringing in that solution at a much more cheaper rate? Or, you know, it's a faster solution, even though it might be more expensive. How much are people or paying customers willing to pay for that extra speed or extra time saving, extra efficiency, better quality? So you can test the waters, but then don't wait around for too long to test.
Got it.
Yeah, just don't be in a situation where you spend 2 to 3 years trying to figure out if this business is going to succeed or not. I mean, I think I give myself 6 months.
6 months.
6 months.
How do you go about juggling between family, fitness, and your business?
Pretty easy.
Because they say work-life balance. Do you believe that's true?
No. I don't think there's anything called balance. I think there is the concept of health, wealth, and relationships. Now, within health, you can figure out its mental health, physical health. Within relationships, you can have your parents, your spouse, your friends, your partner, your children. Within wealth is whatever you do for a living to make money, which is whether your career, your businesses, whatever it takes. And then there's that social currency side of things, which is socializing with people, right? Everyone's a brand in today's day and age. And if you aren't a brand, then are you even out there? So I think when you look at these sort of pillars, it's about priority. I want to live every day of my life as if it's the last day of my life. And I know that the answer is I would want to spend that time with my family. Anyone that I've ever asked that question to has come back and saying, I would want to be spending the last day of my life with someone I love and I care about, traveling the world or doing whatever it takes and having fun.
Exactly.
Right? No one tells me I want to be in the office. So when I book my calendar, I live by it and I make sure my family is priority. So they get the dates first from the annual calendar.
Interesting. Do you say that when you say that, was this always the case, even when you started your initial
Oh
business?
no, these are lessons learned. Life has been a wonderful lesson, and that's why I'm so happy to, you know, be out here, for example, talking to you and spreading this message out there because school did not teach me that. School did not teach me that, hey, you know what? Come December for the next annual year, make sure you have your dates booked in for the following December with your family, because that should be your priority. Or is it your priority? Okay, you care about your health. You say that, but I mean, you've been an athlete. You're still probably fit, looking fit, right? Working out. I mean, how many people do you know that actually prioritize their health? they say
not,
this.
It's not the average anymore.
Yeah, it's not the average, but you know why? It's because they don't plug it into their schedule. So I made sure that every morning I have an hour and a half booked in my calendar for my health.
Everything's booked.
Everything is booked.
Got it. So going back into business, where do you see from you being a serial entrepreneur, where do you see the next big gap that exists out there in the UAE right now?
So obviously, because I see a gap, I'm trying to achieve, to fill it, right? So, and I don't think it's a trade secret. I mean, I've been very vocal about this, that I'm out here to create an ecosystem of basically a support system for businesses and entrepreneurs. Gone are the days where access to money was a problem. Today, you have access to funds. It's a global economy from that perspective. So you're no longer building businesses just for UAE, right? You're building businesses to be global more often than not. You have access to global money now sitting here in Dubai. The question is that do the businesses that are out here have access to support?
Hmm.
Is there someone helping them with marketing? Is there someone helping them with recruitment? Is there someone helping them with their finances? Is there someone helping them with the cash flow management, which is actually the number one problem with SMEs? They don't really understand the concept of cash flow because they were told that numbers is a bad thing. They were scared of numbers. They never bothered looking at spreadsheets. And then they want to be, you know, owning businesses. How do you plan to be an entrepreneur if you can't read basic financial statements? Plus, do a lot more beyond just reading.
There's more money coming into the business than coming out.
You know what? We raised an invoice for $1 million, but we never got paid. But my P&L says I'm $1 million up. But where is the money? Right? So it's silly things, but unfortunately, not everyone comes with the same set of skills and experience. So those people that have an amazing idea, an amazing vision, that have the willingness to solve that problem, create value, need support. And I think today the gap in UAE is from that perspective of that support system.
I'm very curious though to ask. I've told you about my business a little bit in terms of consulting. If you were to figure out a certain gap in what I do right now, me being the face of the brand, having my consulting business sports truly through social media and with partners, what sort of gap would you see in that if you were telling me?
All right. Do you have a business development team?
Business development team?
Yeah.
What would that define as?
Someone who's bringing in sales?
Sales? No. I would be mostly, I have it through ads spending, and then I have a sales partner who definitely does the calls.
All right. Okay. Yeah. What kind of consulting?
Consulting in terms of full relocation package,
etc., right?
Yes.
Now, how easy is it to duplicate that idea?
Depending on what you say is easy. Easy in terms of duplicating me?
Yeah. How easy is it to duplicate what's in your brain?
For me, duplicating Hamid, I feel it's hard.
Okay, so you failed. Because this business dies the day you decide not to be interested in it.
Hmm. Maybe so.
Yeah. So, but no, I knew you were expecting the different answer, but that's the trick, right?
No, that's,
so if
that's,
this business is dependent on you, it's not a business.
Mm-hmm.
As much as you think this defines entrepreneurship, it doesn't. This business has to succeed without you. So what you need to be doing first is bringing everything that's in this beautiful brain of yours onto a document, writing out processes, writing out the SOPs, and that's what you should be doing rather than walking around the streets telling me what location might fit my family, because someone else should be doing that instead of you.
Mm.
What you need to be doing is now looking at those processes. How do I bring technology into the equation? How do I bring digitization? How do I speed up things? How do I bring efficiencies? How do I make this process better? Are there new gaps in the market? How do I plug those gaps in? Are there new questions being asked? Are there new needs when someone's relocating?
Got it. It's an interesting thing because in a world where now the face value plays a huge role, like if we look at even the high level, we look at Elon Musk, we look at Donald Trump, we look at Jeff Bezos, whatever they put their money on or their trust on, you see that that business goes up immediately. Yeah. As more of the face values now became more important than the organization face, if you know what I mean.
So to answer that point, to talk a little bit further on that point, I would say, go look at what's actually happening. Are they selling more cars at Tesla just because he said something? No.
Mm-hmm.
He's not really creating value from that perspective. What you're referring to is the play at the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a transaction. It's just change of hands. Someone's getting poorer, someone's getting richer. That's all it is.
Got it.
It's a transaction, change of wealth, right?
But what about when it comes to the investors, when they're investing in Elon Musk, they're investing in him more so than the company because they trust him.
Yeah, because he has a proven capability of creating these great organizations. It's not Elon Musk going out there and putting the nuts and bolts on the rocket, right?
True.
So they understand that he has a capability of creating organizations, mm-hmm. which will continue to run even while he's putting out crazy statements. So it's on the contrary. I like the idea that this person has an ability to create a self-sustainable business.
Hmm.
That's what I'm investing in.
Got it. Do most people overhype the entrepreneur life or underestimate its pain?
As an entrepreneur, you know the pain. But if you haven't done it, then unfortunately, you get sucked into just what you see as an output, which is the success stories, because you don't see the failures, right? They disappear.
True.
You don't know how many businesses were shutting down yesterday, day before, because there's no one to talk about them. You're not out there preaching and, you know, boasting and putting ads out there about a failed business that, hey, we had to shut down. Here's a banner on Sheikh Zayed Road. That ain't going to happen. So all you see is success stories. And from that perspective, unfortunately, the common people look at success and assume that to be a guaranteed output of entrepreneurship. But it's only when you've been an entrepreneur do you know the real challenge.
What's one belief about success that you hold that most people will say you're crazy or call you crazy in this case?
I think the ability to accept emotions and be aware of your emotions. So if I'm being honest with you, I am afraid. I have anxiety. I have, you know, questions in my head every time I'm starting a business, but it's the ability to still do what needs to be done that matters. I mean, if I were to skydive, no matter how many times you've done it in the past, you will still have a moment where you will be afraid, where it is still that leap of faith every time. But it's knowing that you got to keep being persistent. You don't let those negative emotions stop you from doing what needs to be done for the bigger cause. And I don't think people realize it. I think people feel like, oh, you're feeling afraid. Don't be afraid. I mean, how do you control emotions? There's no concept of controlling emotions. What you can control is what you do when the emotion strikes.
Mm.
Control your controllables.
If you could erase that one buzzword you keep hearing in the startup world, what would that be?
Disruption.
Disruption, huh?
Disruption. Oh, I'm disrupting the market. I'm sorry, you're only using that word because you don't have clarity about what you're doing.
Got it.
It's not disruption that matters. Honestly, it's persistence. It's the grind. It's the consistency. It's the ability to wake up every morning and keep pushing in that direction. That's what matters. Throwing these words like disruptions are usually because someone's trying to mask their own inability to explain what they're doing.
Interesting. Don't you think maybe because they want to set themselves apart from the existing competition?
No, I think it's because it's become a fad. It's like AI. I mean, they throw the word AI around without truly realizing, what does it even mean? Have you ever coded one code in your life before you start talking about AI? Have you read enough? Do you understand it's just machine learning and
AI integrated solution?
I mean, seriously, then you wonder why people are getting scammed.
Very true. I mean, like, everything you see right now is like AI automated, AI integrated solution, AI something, AI that. Everything's AI. AI customer experience.
Yeah. I mean, guess what? Sentiment analysis was here before AI, right? Chatbots were here before AI. The word AI, right? The buzzword.
Some people get confused between the two, chatbot and the AI.
But that's what it is.
They say they think it's like, okay, the chatbot will be able to respond based on given answers, while that one is more so it'll be able to give the appropriate answers and chat with them in a way conversational.
Can you even remember how many years ago when we were on that Google search bar trying to start searching and it would give us certain a drop-down list of things to pick from?
Yes.
This didn't happen after AI, right? That's predictive analysis. Existed for a very long time. Yes. I mean, I love the fact that a lot more investment is going into the side of things because now that means you'll have better tools, better accuracy. But yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone's losing their jobs because of it.
You don't think so?
I mean, listen, any technology will disrupt the market to a degree in terms of there'll be shifts, but digitization is just an enabler to your business. It is not your business.
Mm-hmm. Now, for someone who's listening to this whole podcast, what is that one advice you would give to them to start their journey in the entrepreneurship world?
Start the journey. I would say stop being so afraid. What's the worst that's going to happen, right? But if you can get your basics right in terms of fundamentally, what value are you creating by problem solving? Second, don't go around listening to those people around you telling you, oh, it sounds like a great idea. Find out if they have actually ever paid a single penny to solve that problem. And unfortunately, the people who you're surrounded with want to support you and they will always make it look like your ideas are the best ideas in the world. But test the waters by asking them the right questions. Have they ever paid money for this problem to be solved? Because actions are a better measurement tool than, you know, futuristic wishful thinking.
Jagger, it's been real pleasure to have you here in this podcast. And I think there has been a lot of insights that you've shared about the entrepreneurship world. Even for me, learning about what I need the gaps to be fulfilled. I'm sure there's a lot to learn from you. Where could people reach out to you?
Listen, I'm out there on the social, at Jagger Sagar. You can connect with me on my website, jaggersagar.com.
And that's where they can find you? Can they DM you there on Instagram or?
Yeah, actually they can.
Really?
Yes. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Instagram, I'm on YouTube. Listen, I am doing this because I have a passion to, you know, share the knowledge, share the experience, share the stories, because we're not going to take these with us into the future. And these stories need to be told, because I think if you can learn from someone's life experience by listening to this podcast, rather than living that whole lifetime trying to learn it, that's value created there.
For sure. Giving to others when they need it most.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Jagger.
Thank you. Thank you so much.